former Vancouver Canuck, former Flame, among other teams. Brendan Morrison joins me, as he does every Thursday. How are you? Are you safe? Are you healthy?
Yes, both, Scotty. Yeah, thank you. Hope you are as well. But yeah, safe and healthy. You know, the family's hanging in there, and good family bonding time. That's how we're approaching it. A lot of card games after dinner. A lot of board games going. So we've been doing all right.
Yeah, I think most of us are in that same boat, and I hope everybody else that's listening is safe and healthy as well. You're such an outdoorsman, Mo. Like, is it hard for you not being out in the wilderness on a daily basis?
Yeah, you know, like, fortunate that way, we actually came over to the island here a week ago. So we've hunkered down over here, and, you know, I think the beauty of that is there's a little bit more space, I guess not as much population over here, more space to get out, like go on hikes, go walk on the beach, and keep your distance from people and just stay in the house, really. That's what we've been doing. So being able to get some fresh air has been a nice reprieve.
That's awesome. Brendan Morrison joining us this morning, as he does every Thursday. I just mentioned that brawl between the Avalanche and the Red Wings back in the 90s after Lemieux broke Chris Draper's face and then they played the very next season. You would have been at Michigan at the time. I'm sure you vividly remember that rivalry, though.
Oh, yeah, that was huge. That was absolutely – sorry, I got the dog going again.
All good, man. We're inclusive.
Timing,
we're inclusive.
Timing is everything no matter where you are. Hasn't barked all day until I get on the phone.
That's okay.
But yeah, I remember that vividly. Yeah, being at Michigan and that rivalry was just taken to another level. And it's interesting. I actually showed my son, you know, kind of some old time hockey, and showed him that brawl and those clips, and what kind of led to that whole situation. And he just couldn't believe it, you know, compared to today's game.
No, I imagine he couldn't, and it's interesting. We're all going in the Wayback Machine right now. We're all looking at old games. I don't know how many classics you've caught, but SportsCenter's been playing a lot of classic games, and some involve the Canucks and some involve the Flames, the Leafs, what have you, across this country. But you get into these discussions. We had a big one yesterday about Gretzky and Lemieux and comparing their careers, and we started to focus a little bit on that 88-89 season, the one where Lemieux almost got to 200 points in the back injury. He didn't quite get there. He got to 199, and that somehow he didn't win the Hart Trophy this year, and Gretzky won it with 168 points, but Yzerman had 155 points this year. It was just such a different time in hockey, wasn't it?
Well, I was, as a kid growing up in that era, I mean, it was awesome to watch. I mean, a lot of nights you're watching games are 7-6, 8-5, yeah, I mean, I felt bad for the goaltenders for sure, but you're right. I mean, what a special talent Lemieux was, and you know, it had such a phenomenal career, and dealt with so many injuries, back problems, and he came through the cancer, and came back and played after that, and you know, to me, Gretzky was kind of my idol growing up on the West Coast, and him playing out in Edmonton, obviously, and got to see him a lot. But there were so many talented players in that era. You mentioned Yzerman. I think that might have been the year he scored 65. Just so many talented players. But, I was very, very fortunate to watch these guys on TV and then have a chance to play against them all. And, you know, I remember my first face-off against Gretzky at Madison Square Garden and just, you know, basically just staring at him and like I'm sure a lot of other guys did. So for him, it probably wasn't a big deal, you know, having somebody stare at him. But for me, it was, I didn't even see the linesman drop the puck. I just was kind of in la-la land. And then playing against Lemieux for the first time. And I always, you know, Gretzky was my guy, but I always admired and respected Lemieux for his skill for such a big guy. And then to play against him for the first time and how big he was on the ice, and he just looked so effortless. Like it looked like he wasn't even, you know, skating, but he was flying out there. And this was even later in his career, but he still moved so well for such a big guy. And just the presence he had on the ice was, you know, I don't know if there was another guy I played against that had that presence.
And it was such a different time, Brendan. One of the things that I talked about yesterday when we were having this discussion about Gretzky and Lemieux, it's so insane to look back on now. But at the time, and you'll remember this because you and I are the same age, at the time, it was viewed as, listen, Lemieux should be able to take care of himself out there. If people want to hack and whack and hold and grab and punch him, he's a big guy. He should take care of himself. We obviously didn't look at Gretzky that way at all. Semenko protected him. You were not going to touch 99. It's nuts that we were willing to legislate that great skill out of the game simply because he was in a bigger body.
Yeah, and that was, you know, obviously mentality is so much, was so much different back then than it is now. And I mean, you watch the tapes and you watch the abuse that these skilled guys took. And some guys took more than others, like you said, simply because they were physically bigger people. But you know, as we used to call it, the water skiing, where guys would just, you know, latch their sticks on a back check around a guy's waist and basically not even take a stride, just get towed up the ice by the guy carrying the puck, the offensive player, and the clutching and grabbing. I mean, it was completely different.
That 1989 season, the one that's 88-89 that you mentioned, Yzerman had the great year, 155 points, and Lemieux led the league with 199. Is it not insane to think that a guy who led the league with 199 points not only didn't win the Hart, he didn't win the Lester B. Pearson either. The players voted for Steve Yzerman on that. So Lemieux, all he left there with was the Art Ross, which, hey, that's a nice title to have, but he didn't get either of those awards.
Yeah, that's crazy to think about that, to be honest with you. And as much as I, you know, like Gretzky, and he was my idol. I mean, I don't know how Lemieux doesn't win the Hart Trophy that year by, you know, almost putting up 200 points to really, to be the second player in the history of the game to do it. I mean, Gretzky did it a few times, but to have Lemieux do that and to come up 1 point short, I mean, man, what an incredible season.
Yeah, it certainly was. Two guys actually left him off their Hart Trophy ballots. I don't know who they were, but they should be fired immediately for that.
Seriously. They don't know much about the game, obviously.
Clearly not. Brendan Morrison joining me this morning, as he does every Thursday. Another question that we were asking this week, and some people answered Gretzky to this, and some people answered Lemieux. We're all in this quarantine isolation world right now. We're all looking for sports. So if I were to tell you, you could pick any athlete, and if you pick that athlete, in your PVR, immediately you get every single one of that athlete's televised events. Which guy do you want? Which library do you want, Mo?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm going to throw a couple at you, Scotty. Just and I know the ones that you mentioned there before on the show, there was Tiger Woods and Jordan. I mean, I think those are no-brainers. But, you know, I'm going to give you a couple from different sports here. I'm going to go, well, for hockey, we'll start with that because that's, you know, probably a sport that I have the most knowledge on. I have to say Gretzky, just I think watching his childhood growing up and how he always played against older players and how he would have looked on the ice against those guys and how dominant he was would have been something cool to see. But I'll throw in that mix as well, Connor McDavid. I think in this day and age, you know, he's one of the few guys that I love to tune in and watch play. It's just to see his childhood and you know, to see where he got to where he is today would be pretty neat. But off the radar guys here, maybe a little bit, a couple different sports. I'll go one football guy like Tom Brady. So here's a guy, and I might be a bit biased, you know, he's an ex-Wolverine like I am, but if you think about it, you know, he came into Michigan and he didn't play a snap until his junior year. I mean, I think he was seventh on the depth chart in Michigan and was thinking of transferring back to California, but he stuck it out and he started in his junior year every game. And then his senior year, there's another quarterback that was highly touted freshman, Drew Henson, who I don't know, I mean, you would know who he is. He actually signed a pro contract with the Yankees as a baseball pitcher, but still continued to play football at Michigan. So Henson came in, and then him and Brady actually started to alternate quarters in Brady's senior season after he had been a starter his whole entire junior season. So just to see the evolution of what this guy went through coming into school, I think the mental struggles that he went through maybe at school and challenges, and to see where he is today is arguably maybe the greatest quarterback of all time, just to see how that evolution took place, how he handled, you know, the adversity and his mindset getting through all of that and then continuing to push himself to be better and better. I think that would be pretty cool. A couple other guys here, you know, with my daughter so heavily involved in soccer, you know, I love watching Lionel Messi. I think that would be pretty neat watching him growing up over the years and his soccer highlights. And then another guy I'm going to throw out there is Rafa Nadal, how he's actually dominant right-handed, but he plays tennis left-handed. To see how that change occurred early in his career, he was taught by his uncle, But to see how that coaching took place and what was the dynamics, say, hey, no, you're not going to play with your right hand, you're going to play with your left hand, and how that took place. So a couple off the radar there.
The biggest surprise in that entire answer to me is that you're a Nadal guy over Federer or Joker.
I know. I appreciate them all. I really do. But I like the demeanor of Rafa probably the best out of all of them. That's probably why I take him.
You like him a little more fiery. Djokovic is fiery as well, but it's a different kind of fire. Brendan Morrison with me this morning. Drew Hansen, I did not look this up. If memory serves, he wore number 5 at Michigan, didn't he?
I think so, yes. Or 7. Yeah. No, he wore 7, I think.
Oh, he wore 7? I can't remember. We'll look it up after. I remember him vividly, though, yeah, and the whole baseball thing and splitting reps with Brady. Brady gets drafted 199th. You guys went to Michigan. How much did you cross paths with him? Because you're there at the same time.
Yeah, we were at the same time. We overlapped 1 year. You know, I'd be lying if I said we hung out a lot. We didn't. I mean, I ran into him a couple times down at the training center and that. The guys that were a year behind me, like Bill McCault, Marty Turco, guys like that, interacted with him a little bit more because they overlapped for 2 years, but they said he was, you know, phenomenal guy, great guy. Yeah, awesome guy to be
around. So, you mentioned you were a Gretzky fan back in the day. You're a Brady fan as well, obviously a little biased because of the Michigan stuff. Now he goes to Tampa Bay. Were you the type of fan that when your guy went to another team, you went with him, or you stuck with the team you originally cheered for?
Yeah, you know, a lot of times I go with the player. I'm not going to lie. A lot of times the allegiance is with the player. So I'll definitely follow Tampa Bay a lot more closely now than I ever did. I think it's remarkable at this stage in his career. He's 42 years old. Who knows how much he has left? Nobody really knows. But just to see the amount of interest that Tampa Bay is getting now from other free agents who want to go there and play because they think that they have, you know, a very legitimate chance to win the Super Bowl is crazy, the impact that this guy's had on the game.
No, I'm with you. Brett Hull, that was my guy. I followed him from Calgary to St. Louis, and hey, I'll cheer for the Blues as long as Brett Hull is there. So I totally get it. Steve Nash was like that for me as well. He was really going to test me if he went and played with the Knicks because I don't like the Knicks at all, and he didn't, and I'm not a huge Lakers guy, but I could get on board with that. But Steve Nash was like that for me. I get it. You travel with your fandom once you are attached to an athlete. Brendan Morrison.
Did you have a big, heavy shot like Hull? Is that how you, that
yeah,
the connection
Yeah, as you can tell. Yeah, for sure.
Nice.
The relief. I'm glad that came across. I don't know why. Sometimes you just get attached to a player. And when he was in Calgary, I liked him, and he wasn't in very good shape, but he could score. And he didn't score prolifically in Calgary, Mo, but for whatever reason, I liked him. And he got traded to St. Louis, and I went, I'm going to keep cheering for that guy. And he turned into what, you know, I don't think most people anticipated him turning into. But sometimes you just get in on a guy early.
And the crazy thing about Brett Hull is, if you think even further back than when he started playing pro hockey, even before college, so he played a year of junior hockey in Penticton. And I guess the story that I've always been told is that he wasn't even invited to the camp. And his best friend was invited to the camp. Penticton really wanted his best friend, and I can't remember his name right now. But anyways, his best friend said, listen, I'll come to camp there, but you have to bring my buddy with me, who was Brett Hull. So Brett goes to camp with his buddy, ends up making the team, scores 105 goals in Penticton. not a bad pickup for Penticton there.
Yeah, that's decent. It's funny how some of those stories go. That's one of the ones about Aaron Rodgers going to Cal Berkeley as well back in the day, that Jeff Tedford, who was the coach there, they actually went to watch the tight end that Rodgers was throwing to when he was at Butte in junior college, and then they end up seeing this quarterback, and the next thing you know, they've got Aaron Rodgers. It's funny how it works out sometimes, isn't it?
Absolutely, and even, you know, another one close to me is, again, Jason Bottrell, a good friend of mine who's the GM in Buffalo. He was a first-round pick by the Dallas Stars, and their farm team was in Houston. Another teammate of mine at Michigan, Blake Sloan, signed in Houston and played his entire college career as a defenseman. Dallas Brass goes in to watch Botts play on a Friday night for the weekend. On Monday, Blake Sloan is signed, is brought up to Dallas as a forward, stays the remaining 2 months of the season, plays in all the playoff games, wins a Stanley Cup.
That's a decent story.
Crazy.
That's a pretty decent story, man. And sometimes you just luck into this stuff.
Yeah.
Hey, Mo, Berkey was also on this morning, and you know Berkey, he can tell stories. He was talking about the draft interview process. We saw everything postponed yesterday, which makes sense. Draft combine, draft itself, all of those different things. And he was talking about draft interview questions. Were there any weird ones for you? What do you remember about your draft interview process?
Yeah, you know, it was, I remember it was busy. I mean, I was in Penticton at the time, was drafted out of the BCHL. And towards the end of the season, we started to talk to a lot more teams. And then as the draft was nearing, that kind of magnified. But kind of different styles. But I remember a lot of times I'd meet scouts, like in a hotel room, go in there, and it'd be almost like psychological testing. I mean, it would be strange. They would sometimes hold up these abstract drawings or designs and ask, what do you see in this picture? I'm like, well, what do you mean? I don't know. It looks like somebody threw some paint on a piece of paper here. You know, but probably not the answer they want to hear. So, you know, at times I felt like, yeah, I might have been reaching for things that or trying to say things that they wanted to hear. But then, you know, at the end of the day, you just got to be yourself, you know, and that's all you can do. And I remember one of my, I guess, best or most memorable interviews, in a sense, was with Sean Dineen, who was a scout for Boston at the time, and he was based out of Penticton. So Sean called me up and said, "Hey, listen, I want to get together with you and you know, have a bit of an interview process. You know, we're watching you and blah blah blah." So I said, "Yeah, no problem. I have time." So he called me and said, "Listen, we're gonna go fly fishing today." I'm like, "Really?" I'm like, this guy's fantastic. I don't have to sit in a room and look at these strange drawings. But yeah, no, he took me fly fishing up in the Penticton area for the day. So I thought that was kind of cool. But I mean, Combine has evolved so much. It's very similar to the NFL Combine now, in a sense, where they bring all the players into one area. You know, they have all the standard testing that they just, all the teams are there at once. When I did it, I remember I had to go to UBC. There was five players they brought in, and we had a guy from UBC just run us through the testing, and then they forwarded all those test scores on to Central Scouting. But obviously much different now.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I'm glad you mentioned that about abstract questions and you're trying to figure out, why are they asking me this? What am I supposed to answer? That was kind of the point of Burke's whole story. Is he said, "I just wanted to loosen the kids up more than anything else. They're so well coached. They're so polished. And quite often they give the answer they think you want to hear instead of telling you something that is actually true." And he said, "For the most part, I was just trying to get to know the kid a little bit."
Well, and I think that's what it comes down to, right? I mean, is it doing your homework and doing your research, especially nowadays? I mean, the draft is such an integral part of building your team. And if you miss on a kid at a high pick because he doesn't have the right attitude or is a bit different, I mean, it's a huge, huge miss. And, you know, thinking back to my draft year as well, I mean, the one team that was the most thorough where I ended up getting drafted to was New Jersey. New Jersey, they actually flew me out to Toronto, and they put me through a battery of physical tests. Like, one of the big tests in New Jersey was they do a stress test. And this was, geez, about probably 6 weeks after my season had ended. So I hadn't done a lot of training or anything at all. I was just kind of recovering from the season. But flew into Toronto, and they put you on a treadmill, and you just start out, they hook you up to a bunch of, you know, different monitors, and you just start walking on a treadmill at a certain speed. And every 3 minutes, the treadmill actually increases the incline and it speeds up. So, I mean, basically you just stay on that treadmill as long as you can, like 3, 6, 9, 12, 15. And by the time you're between that 12 and 15, you're pretty much just holding on. And basically what I found out is what they're trying to test is how far a kid or a player can push themselves. Like, you know, does he give up early, or can he push through, you know, discomfort? You know, how hard does he battle? And that was always a big test that they would do in training camp.
Especially on a treadmill, which can be so monotonous.
Oh yeah, it's mental, right? I mean, that's part of the battle, is just grinding through it.
Well, Berkey told a quick story, and I'll share it with you just before we let you go, Mo. He was telling the story about, he would ask a kid, "Hey, so do you have a dog?" "Yeah, I've got a dog." And he'd say, "Well, what kind of dog do you have?" And he could see the kid pause, because he said, like, in one case, a kid, their dog at home was a poodle, but he didn't know if he should tell Brian Burke that he had a poodle, because what did that say about him as an NHL prospect if he had a poodle?
Yeah, I could see Berkey doing that for sure. Yeah,
That's
that's
awesome.
funny, man. That's funny. Yeah, no, exactly. I could see a kid's mindset there. Well, no. It's a cross with Rottweiler.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what we have at home. Great Dane. That's exactly what I'm going to be in your league. Hey, Mo, all the best to you and Aaron and the kids. Stay healthy. Glad to see you're back in BC, and we'll talk soon, my friend.
Absolutely. Yeah, you guys stay healthy as well, and keep up the good work.